Case number 96-36, Laredo Development Company versus the Village of Sharp. Mr. Coyne.
May it please the court, my name is Anthony J. Coyne. With me today is co-counsel Eli Manos, and also members of the Iowa Police family. I would like to reserve approximately 3 minutes for my rebuttal.
Watch your time.
May it please the court, we ask that this court overturn the decision of the 11th Appellate District reversal of the trial court decision in this case. We'd like to remind the court that the subject property law includes approximately 13.4 acres of land to be conveyed to Walmart for a standard Walmart store. The total property up in the C1 district includes approximately 25 acres of land. In pointing to
Mr. Counsel, the existing zoning, could you describe the uses, the allowed uses?
The existing zoning allows retail on it. It does provide, however, that the retail establishments must be no greater than 10,000 square feet, or for that matter, employing more than 10 people. Okay. It also includes hotel, motel, laboratories, taverns, things of that nature, which it does not impose such a restriction in size or in the number of employees. And in fact, if I can point, Justice, to the property in question, it is located here. The C1 district, which is subject to this case, and the two specific propositions that we believe are unconstitutional, the 10-employee, 10,000 square foot limitation, only applies to zoning in this location and this location. In the entire municipality of Chardon, every other zoning classification, C2, C3, C4, every business and commercial classification doesn't have such a restriction on size.
But that restriction was on there when your client bought the property, wasn't it?
It was.
So they took it with knowledge.
Yes, Your Honor.
And there's evidence in the record, is there not, that it could be developed even at a profit now?
Well, we would question whether the other uses are in fact viable and appropriate uses.
Well, it doesn't make as much money, but it doesn't make it confiscated either, does it?
It makes nowhere near as much money, but we would submit that the total, you know, types of other uses have not been fully evaluated if they're provided in the code. But I also wanted to point out in answering that question that the other zoning classifications would provide for commercial retail businesses. In particular, on the town square, which one would presume to be the area you're trying to preserve, there is no such restriction, virtually no such restriction. So while the proposition contained in some of the pleadings to have a shard suggests that there's a small town atmosphere trying to be preserved, why would you do it out here only? There is no other restriction in the rest of the municipality of Chardon.
Well, without being able to actually visualize the streets, it could be because those particular streets, even though they're on the outskirts, have the point to the maps their shops. I mean, that's just to say that you're trying to preserve a particular area of town here and not there, without seeing a map like that, doesn't show its character, doesn't show its street, doesn't show its atmosphere, that's hard to judge the atmosphere.
Justice, I would submit that nowhere in the zoning code does it provide that that is the purpose for the restrictions. And furthermore, in the master plan of this community and in their thoroughfare plan, they identify the properties on the western end of the of Chardon to be utilized for fairly significant development. In the master plan, the comprehensive plan that was submitted in the record before Judge Henry made very clear, this is a section of town where there are vast tracts of land to be developed, where development, use it towards like development is imminent. They're vacant land, it's vacant land, with the exception of is the land use. Plan points out some commercial and industrial nearby. Across the street, there are apartment buildings. There aren't quaint shops or quaint.
Can you agree under the current Jericho test if you fail that you do?
I believe under the current Jericho test, the second prong of the test was not clearly, you know, the economic confiscation was not clearly decided. However, we believe that the first part of the test, we would meet the first part of the test.
We do not meet the second part.
We do not meet the second part of the test. And we also submit that the whole idea of a conjunctive test for this kind of a case seems to place a burden on a property owner that it's almost impossible to challenge any zoning regulation, particularly one which has such a restriction. And when you have the kind of evidence that is incredible on this evidence, the trial judge, when you have not just the experts that we were about it not advancing legitimate public purpose.
That's a matter of opinion, is it not? I mean, who is somebody, some expert coming down and saying, well, the people of Chardon are sort of off base because they want to keep a certain atmosphere on the street in the city?
I suppose that we have to look to the zoning code to see if, in fact, that atmosphere is what the zoning code's purpose was to protect, and there's nothing in the code.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, the appellee says that even if you strike the words, the phrases in the code that you challenge, that even then this use can be denied. I don't see any response to that in your reply brief.
I didn't see that as a credible explanation because we weren't asking for the property to be rezoned. We're asking for the court to evaluate those two restrictions. This use is conditionally permitted within their zoning code. It's just these two particular restrictions. Our position was that those two restrictions, when taken out of the code, you can certainly still apply it. But if you look at the purpose clause of the code, you can see that you're to address generally traffic and also harm, you know, the neighborhood harmony. Most of this property, as I said, is vacant. Furthermore, when it relates to traffic, Justice, the interconnector road, which is to alleviate the traffic problem in town, not out here, the interconnector road would go and car right through our property and take the traffic, particularly the truck traffic, south of the town center, so as to alleviate their existing traffic problem in the town center.
Well, wouldn't a Walmart type of store violate the other words of the code that refer to small businesses and local retail? This is not to be, I mean, obviously it would attract local people, but it's also to be a regional story.
Well, I would also submit under the purpose clause, and it's actually section 111. The statement of purpose is it's on page 20 of our brief, which is 1119.08. The C1 section says that the restricted business is, and I quote, is intended to provide for the development of local and regional commercial areas. And it goes on to state that it is the intent to encourage the concentration of local business and service at certain strategic locations. And it goes on to state that they should be located on major arteries. State Route 44, which is goes north to south, and State Route 6, which is what we're on, are the two major arteries in Chardon.
Council, I was interested to, let me just back up. We can say Chardon, a backwater, just don't get it kind of community.
Look, Your Honor, I'm reluctant to.
We do take control arguments, so you.
I would say that their planning is not particularly sophisticated.
Well, I mean, you offer in your brief this Professor Crum, who says that the concept of local retailing seems to me to be an antiquated one. The vision one gets in terms of local retailing, somebody getting off a trolley, good old neighborhood walking to a butcher stops or shop or store. I mean, you present that as your view of they just don't get it, that modern retailing has to be a big box.
Well, I don't know that it has to be a big box, but it's certainly going to be larger than 10,000 square feet.
But isn't starting a community that is unique?
I would say all communities are unique, Justice.
Well,
this community has a high-end store.
I like a community that's a little less unique than Chardon. They do have an ambiance, an atmosphere that it would seem to me is much coveted, much sought after. People like to go there, don't they? I mean, this is a place where people go and they go, geez, I'll never go back there again. It's a neat place.
I would say parts of it you may be confusing, frankly, with the township areas that are Franklin Moore Point. The town center has some buildings that are somewhat significant, but frankly, that is not where our property is located. Our property is located near commercial and industrial properties, some of which is undeveloped presently, and it's on Route 6, not far from several fast food restaurants, and I mean within 1,000 or so feet from those kinds of businesses. And in addition, I guess when you look at
your property has no takers under the present zoning.
Zoning, we have not had anyone approach us for a use, particularly with the restrictions that are on the property relating to the 10,000 square feet. And we would submit even that.
Have you attempted to develop it that way? I mean, have you determined that it's, did you present evidence that it's just undevelopable?
We presented evidence that it was available for sale. It still is now. We have not had a taker to utilize. visualize it in that manner. And if I could just digress on that part of it, even their planner identified the fact that you could still put in a shopping center here as long as you kept your stores to less than 10,000 square feet. And one of our exhibits even has such a plan, where it would be 136,000 square feet. You can't do that, or you can do that, but you can't do a Walmart at 98,000 square feet. And really, when it comes to what's the purpose of the code, at the trial, we're kind of incredible evidence presented to the trial judge, we're asking the mayor, who had been a councilman as well for many years, what's the purpose of these two restrictions? His answer is, I don't know. We ask a councilwoman, Councilwoman Carter, what's the purpose of these zoning restrictions? The answer is, I can't think of one at this moment. I mean, these are the kinds of public officials that I would think could at least articulate.
But the voters apparently knew, didn't they? By a narrow margin than the voters.
Well, that's the interesting issue, too. Instead of trying to deal with this and address the zoning code, they, while we were pending initially, they actually added, because under their zoning regulations, they cannot put on the ballot through the council a zoning change unless it includes residential property. So they took a long strip of land, 50 or 100 feet wide, and they added it to our property. This was residential zone. They added it to our property simply to get it on the ballot box, and essentially to sort of send a signal. And they, many of them then, you know, basically campaigned against that zoning change at the ballot box to send a signal that we're not going to change our zoning code. And as we submit in our brief, I don't think that this kind of a land use, you know, property right is a liberty right, and it's a property right that's vested in the owner, the Iacolese family, not something that comes out of the sky. And to say that every time we have a property controversy, we submit to the voters, the media shirking the responsibility as council members.
What about the right of the people who already reside there in the sanctity of the zoning that they relied on at the time, saying this would be 10,000 feet and 10 employees?
To our knowledge, and looking at their own record, there is no evidence that this particular provision was ever enforced over another property owner, and the record's clear that there's no other property zones.
That may all be true, but it's there. And
it's there.
It was there when you all bought the property.
Correct.
Now, don't the adjacent property owners or the people in Chardon also have some rights, vested interests in zoning?
Well, they certainly do, but as we pointed
out... So we shouldn't really make light of their referendum or their vote on it, should we?
Well, it was a close vote. We had nearly as many people supporting it as those people who were opposed to it.
A couple of weeks ago, we ended up sending somebody to the electric chair by a vote of 4-3. Close votes happen all the time.
Correct.
But my question, because we really ought to go back to the law on this, is the Giorgio case.
Yes.
If Giorgio were disjunctive instead of conjunctive, wouldn't you still fail because you failed to meet either test?
I think that we conform to the due process argument in that test clearly, and that there was competent, credible evidence presented to Judge Innerly that demonstrated that. And he found that. The Court of Appeals disregarded practically every piece of evidence that was presented, including the fact that the 10-employee provision was in fact waived by the village and its legal counsel.
Mr. Coyne, your only proposition of law is asking us to make the Giorgio test disjunctive. That's your only proposition of law. You then assert one in your reply brief, which of course isn't in accordance with the rules on the due process issue.
But we maintain that we meet certainly the due process and the test. This particular restriction does not advance to the governmental purpose, so therefore we would prevail on that particular issue of law. The second portion of the test, frankly, is not entirely before the trial court either, because we didn't get into appraisals and whole evaluation. The testimony actually that involves some property that was sold was residentially zoned property near the subject property. I believe I'm out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Coyne. Mr. Powell.
Property owner failed to meet either prong of the test. So if it was a disjunctive or conjunctive test,
be pretty hard to argue under these facts that they couldn't use this property. Maybe not properly, but that's not the test, correct?
Not at all, Your Honor. That's precisely my point.
So how do they fail on the constitutional grounds?
Your Honor, the substantive due process claim is that the zoning is arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable. I think it's very clear throughout time, and this Court's decisions in mine in particular, that it is a valid governmental purpose to distinguish between different uses. Clearly, the Euclid zoning ordinance back in 1922 that was tested in 1926 differentiates between uses, and that's what the city of Chardon is doing here. More recent case, the Ohio Supreme Court has found that it's a proper governmental use to distinguish between retail uses. And I've cited a few of those in my brief. I think that's all the village is doing here. They didn't say you can't come into our village and have a particular use if you want it. It's just not right at this particular point.
Now, they make a lot of distinction about the downtown square, the downtown area versus this area. Is there something unique about this area, even though it's more houses?
Your Honor, it is the large, there's an area of undeveloped land there. Obviously, it is one of the two major entryways into the city. And this is an area that they do have some ability to attempt to control its destiny. And they decided that they want to do their best to control the destiny in having a smaller town atmosphere in this area of the village.
There isn't already a small town atmosphere like a downtown Worthington or here in the village. They're wanting to create
The part of the downtown, the square area, it does have obviously some historic value as far as being a smaller town atmosphere. And they want the ability to extend that out to the outskirts of town, which will come in that way from the eastern suburbs of Cleveland. Route 44, which is the other major entryway, does have properties in town that would allow such a large, unrestricted retail use. And that's all we're saying here. It's a legitimate government to say that there are certain parts of the village that should not, that don't have the right to come in and do this unrestricted retail use, because as everybody that has ever seen the location of a major box retailer like a Walmart, it's not a standalone type store. There are other uses that come to that because that's a regional brawl.
Mr. Powell, if the limitation 10,000 square feet and less, or normally about 10 employees, if that limitation is upheld by this court as unconstitutional in that it violates the substantive due process, what survives? What's your argument? Does local retail business survives on its own?
Yes, sir.
And tell me about that.
I have on page 17 of my brief the striking out of two provisions that are challenged here. That doesn't do away with the distinction between local retail use and the unrestricted retail use. You still have to have a, quote, retail and service establishments which cater to and can be located, close proximity to or within residential districts without creating undue vehicular congestion, excessive noise, or other objectionable influence. It then goes on to talk about some of those examples of permitted uses. It then goes on, other small businesses of an equally restricted and local nature may be permitted based on conditional use certificates which may be issued by the Board of Zoning Appeals. So that's precisely the gist of this case, Your Honor, is that just because if this court decides to do away with those two restrictions, you don't do away with the local retail use. And that's one of the ironies about this case is that the appellants are challenging those two provisions. And they're saying that if you strike out those two provisions, then unrestricted retail is permissible on this property. That's not the case, because there's got to be a distinction that they even claim that it doesn't get rid of the rest of that local retail provision. And the reason is because local retail is only a conditional permitted use there. If the entire local retail is struck from the code, there's no retail allowed in that district at all. So their use, even as a Walmart store, would not be allowed. You'd have to go with the other permitted uses or attempt to go with another condition.
What would be the other permitted uses?
You have things like professional services, you've got offices, you've got hotels, you've got banks, you've got conditionally permitted uses that include caverns, public facilities, things like that. And it's very clear in the record that the owner of the property has said that he can develop that property within the current C1 district. So, you know, those other uses are viable uses. There's no evidence in the record to say that they're not viable, because he testified specifically that they are viable. So, even if these two limitations are cut out of the local retail definition, you still have a local retail definition in the code. And this use simply does not need it in order to get a conditional use certificate. And it brings me back to the...
So if there is no Gergio case, it fails anyway.
Yes, Your Honor. Even if the Gergio test is changed to an or...
No, but even if there was no Gergio test...
If you're just looking at...
You still have another provision in the enactments to say you can't use it for this purpose.
That's right, Your Honor. That's why I indicated in my brief that even that don't think we even need to get to the constitutional question.
You say that the Court of Appeals said that it fails. No, you say, as I indicated in questioning your colleague, that it fails both prongs, even if it's changed to the disjunctive. The Court of Appeals seemed to say that there is no rational governmental interest served by these, didn't they?
Your Honor, they said in relation to the 10 employees, I frankly think that they're wrong, but they said in relation to the 10 employees that doesn't. I've cited some cases just for your information that indicate from other jurisdictions that those are problems. Obviously, there are a lot of differentiations between densities of uses. That's all that the 10 employees talks about. It's not, the way I read the code, a precise limitation. It talks about normally employed less than 10 people.
It doesn't say they may not employ more.
So
I take it as it's an attempt to describe the kind of businesses that the code is attempting to limit or to
That's
permit.
Exactly right. And then the 10,000 square foot limitation is a limitation like you would find for lot lines. And the property owners' experts testify that they know of other communities that have these kind of building size restrictions, floor area restrictions that don't relate to the size of the property. I mean, you know, in most residential districts, there are.
But you haven't cross-appealed that issue anyway. That you haven't cross-appealed here to have us reverse that decision by the Court of Appeals and the trial court.
No,
because it doesn't matter to your position.
That's correct. Because I think there is clearly the legitimate governmental interest in distinguishing between the densities of uses. In this case, it happens to be not a residential density, but basically a retail density. And the purpose part of the C1 restricted business, C1 restricted business district, is it does talk about certain regional commercial uses, but it goes on to define the local retail businesses that it envisions in this particular district. And again, the property owner is not shut out from all those other uses, just from the larger than 10,000 square foot floor area retail store. And I think it's very important when you look at the Garzini case, which I cited, because that case is so, I think, perfectly on point. Because in that case, although appellants don't agree, but I think it's clear in the case, the Garzini challenge is exactly the same challenge that we have here. There was a substance abuse process claim that 100 acre or a park requirement was unreasonable, arbitrary, and hence, the court says on page 342 of its opinion, 62 Ohio State Second, at 342, says, hence unconstitutional. That's a due process, substance of due process claim, just like the substance of due process claim made in this case. The court did reach that substance of due process decision because it said, even if you get rid of the 100-acre requirement for the private park, it still doesn't matter because this smaller park is not a permitted use in the country. The court goes on to say that, you know, there was no challenge, a takings kind of challenge. Like, again, was not made in this case either, that may give you some relief, but that wasn't brought up. All you did was come to this court saying that you're entitled to a conditional use under the substance of due process claim. The court found that we don't need a substance of due process claim because even if we do invalidate the 100-acre minimum for the park, it doesn't matter. Yours is still not a permitted use in that district. And I think that's exactly the case we have here, where they're trying to fit a large box retail use into a very small retail district, local retail district. And I think that is basically the gist of my argument. I think that the standard is very clear. And I should note that the criticism of the Gergio case is not as to that that case to deal with the burden of proof. It puts the burden of proof on the property owner to invalidate zoning ordinance is still there. And it's very high standard. It's beyond fair debate standard. It's equivalent, as this court has said repeatedly, to the criminal standard of beyond a reasonable doubt. That is still there. That burden is there throughout the entire process, throughout the entire case. Now, as far as competent credible evidence, and since I think you have to read more than just competent credible evidence, under the Central Motors case, it's very clear that what you're talking about is competent credible evidence going to all the material elements of the case. In the zoning case, obviously, one of those material elements is the burden of proof. You have to show your case to remove it from the realm of fair debate. If there's not competent credible evidence, it does remove it from the realm of fair debate, you lose. I assert that in this instance, Your Honors, this case has not been removed from the realm of fair debate. I think the Court of Appeals decision should confirm. If there are any other questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Otherwise,
thank you, Mr. Powell. Coyne, you've saved about a minute of your time.
I understand, yeah.
I don't think it does, because that's a different issue. It's not a legal, standard. It's who had the best campaign, frankly, and who manipulated the voters, potentially. Who did the best job of that? I don't think it goes to the standard.
Isn't that the American system?
It is, but sir, I don't think we should submit every constitutional issue to the voters to be decided every time. I don't think that's something that should be submitted to voters, especially when it affects liberty.
Well, your argument, there's a legal argument there that I guess I'd hope to get to is that it is, what is the effect of a voter referendum on whether or not an ordinance violates the Constitution? There's law cited in your brief, both briefs, that indicates.
And I believe that if it doesn't pass constitutional muster and violates the Constitution, then I think the courts have the right and the obligation to intervene to keep an unjust law from being enforced. In this particular case, they didn't create a new ordinance. They just tried to put it in a different zoning category. And so it would be our position that that doesn't mean that it should be the law of the land because the voters put it in place. I think it still has to be constitutional muster.
Was this referendum or initiative?
It was a referendum petition established by the village council the first time.
The council just proposed the legislation and asked them to vote on it. The council never passed it, did they?
They did pass it. They did pass
it. Passed it to put it to a vote.
Put it to a vote. They approved the legislation to change the zoning, and then they referred it by adding additional residential land to put it to a vote. And that's exactly what happened the first time. If I could just make one final comment on, my council, my esteemed council, changes the subject from 10,000 square foot to whether or not it's local retail. In the definition, it says local retail. Local retail should be defined more clearly than just 10,000 square feet or 10 employees. The Walmart store would serve the community. No one questioned that at trial. There's a Walmart in Menor, there's a Walmart in Macedonia. There are Walmarts and Sam's Clubs, probably, I don't know how many, but within a short drive of this particular site. So I think it's unfair to characterize that.
So then why do they need it?
Sounds like enough Walmart.
This community has tried to, if it's already convenient to the residents,
to answer the question, to serve, to be more convenient to that local population. And I think that there was no one contradicted that even in trial. In fact, at trial, it was agreed by their expert, they retained a planner as well, who misread the code. This is the only use, the local retail use in this zoning district where they can control the size of it. If they are so concerned about restoring, I guess, a small town atmosphere and vacant land is near fast food restaurants, I suppose they should have thought about that for laboratories, taverns, office buildings, hotels, and motels that probably developed on this property, which I think goes to the fact that this is virtually the restriction that is unexplainable. I mean, it really doesn't have any support, and it is irrational because it doesn't relate to any experience that we see now when we go out and we shop for our families. We would hope that the court would consider reversing.
Thank you, Mr. Coyne. Case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.